We are back with another masterclass with Alex Pardo on the Flip Empire Show, episode 276.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
What's going on, guys? I appreciate you all hopping on the podcast here. If you've never joined us before, I welcome you. I appreciate you taking the time. My name's Alex Pardo. I'm the host of the Flip Empire Show. And if you've been with me for a while or you recently plugged in, again, I do appreciate you taking the time to hop back on. I'm going to do something and pivot. I'm going to do something a little different here, kind of going a little bit of a direction, different direction, I should say, with this particular masterclass. So I just finished spending 3 days. We kind of had like a slumber party over at my good friend Steve Cavanaugh's house. Steve Cavanaugh is a super, super successful real estate investor. And even better, he's just an awesome person. Family man, has a beautiful family. His wife, Carrie, is awesome. Their kids. And, you know, I met Steve about a year and a half ago, roughly, give or take, through Life in Air. You guys, if you've been following the show, you know that I am, that's one of the masterminds I'm a part of that's had a big impact on my life. And Steve has just been a great friend, and we've become pretty close over the course of the last year and a half. And so my wife and I went, we stayed over their house over in West Palm and just had an awesome time just kind of connecting and just having fun, you know, sharing stories, talking. And I thought I'd do something a little bit different here. So a couple of months ago, this was right before Thanksgiving, okay? Right before Thanksgiving, Steve, who runs the Southern Maryland Real Estate Investors Association, okay? So Steve is from Maryland, but a couple of years ago, he moved to South Florida, to West Palm Beach. And so now they have a beautiful home out there, and they've kind of just, they've set roots there the last couple of years. But he still runs the Southern Maryland Real Estate Investors Association. And once a month, he travels back and runs that meeting. You know, it's a fantastic RIA. And Steve has generated a lot of business from the RIA. He's, you know, had a big impact on those people. He's got a very successful coaching program. But this particular case, because it was Thanksgiving, Steve actually still, he didn't cancel or postpone the meeting. He still had the meeting, but he did it on Facebook Live. And I was honored to be asked to be the guest speaker to his Southern Maryland Real Estate Investors Group virtually. So we did a Facebook Live, and it was very well received from what Steve told me. It was very interactive, you know, people asking questions. So what I decided to do was kind of repurpose that Facebook Live. And because it was about an hour and 45 minutes, I'm splitting it up into two parts. So episode 276 here is part one. And if you plug next week, depending on when you're listening to this, episode 278 is going to be part two. And Steve is just such an awesome interviewer. He asked me a ton of questions, a lot of questions, which, you know, I've been fortunate to speak and be on different podcasts. And there's a lot of questions he asked me that I've never been asked before. And so even if you've been following the show for a while, you may have never even, you know, heard, you know, some of these stories or some of my answers. But on part one, guys, specifically, what we're going to do here is, you know, I talk about my story. I talk about my biggest mistake. One of the questions, cool questions that Steve asked me is, what was my favorite failure? And some of you guys might be surprised. He asked me about why I launched this particular podcast, the Flip Empire Show. He even, you know, there were some people that were asking on Facebook Live, you know, how to start and launch a podcast. What are some of the benefits, pros, cons, etc.? So I get into that. We talk about social media and how we were able to just, you know, prior to that time, pop off a $40,000 net deal because one of my team members posted on her Instagram about a property that we were having a very, very difficult time selling. One of the cool questions, another question he asked me is, you know, what new behaviors, beliefs, and habits have I recently adopted? And my answer is probably going to surprise you. Very similarly, I was very transparent, as I always am, and I shared how kind of leading up to that interview, I was kind of in a little bit of a funk and what I did to break out of it. You know, so what else? He asked my thoughts on the market. So I talk about that. He asked me, what are my thoughts on the word hustle? And again, this is one where my answer might surprise you. We talked about who your first hire should be. I mean, just a lot of diverse questions and answers. So I think you're going to enjoy part one here. And again, I want you to listen to this. You're going to have some takeaways. And even if you have, if you know my story and you've been following the show, we cover some different things here on part one. And then same goes for part two. So make sure to plug in, depending on when you're listening to this, to episode 278. That's going to be the part two of Steve Cavanaugh interviewing me and essentially me speaking to the Southern Maryland Real Estate Investors Association. So I appreciate you. Love you guys. And let's hop right into part one here with my buddy Steve Cavanaugh.
So we're going to go ahead and get started, Alex. Man, thank you so much, first of all, for coming on this year. I know it's a busy week. If it's anything like my household, it's a hectic week. You know, here we are trying to get moved into this new house and everything, and then we are hosting Thanksgiving on top of it. And it's been pretty crazy, but that's the way that this time of year goes. Man, I want to address the Southern Maryland Real Estate Investors Group first and foremost, and just, hey, thank you everybody who is on this call now and everybody who's going to be tuning in over the coming months and perhaps maybe years ahead virtually watching this. It is Thanksgiving 2018 here, and we are just super excited to do another one of these lives for you. Obviously, we're not there in person tonight. It'll be funny. I'll bet you that we will have some people still show up to the meeting tonight. But it's nice to be with you virtually here. So my hope through this next hour or so is that we can just kind of ask Alex some really good questions, have him share some stories with us and his experiences. He is one of the nation's premier wholesalers. And what he has done is he has built a wholesaling company. Many, many, many of you come to me every single month and say, Steve, I just want to get started wholesaling. I just want to wholesale a property. Well, what Alex has done is he is not only wholesale property, but he's built a business around it to where I believe he has six or seven or eight employees now that he'll tell us all about in a little while. Yeah. But he's built a business around the business of wholesaling property. So he's not just wholesaling one or two at a time. He's wholesaling dozens typically every month. So we're going to get into his numbers and we'll ask him some questions about how to build all that out. But this is just to tell those of you who just love wholesaling and always want to do wholesaling, this is the guy. This is one of the guys in the country that has not only just taken wholesaling, but I mean, has taken it and built a business around, taken it to the complete and total next level. Like I said, he's one of my good friends. He's in the Life Inner Mastermind group with me and just a guy that just instantly connected with, and our families are really good friends now and, you know, been on vacation together, mastermind together. Just a super, super, super cool guy. So, Alex, welcome to the Southern Maryland Real Estate Investment Group. It's great to have you here virtually.
Thank you, buddy. Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. I have no idea if I'm going to be able to live up to all of that, but thank you for your words, brother. You know, I appreciate it.
Well, of course you will. Let's go ahead and start with where you're at today. And then what I'd like to do is maybe we can work backwards from there. And my hope is that we'll be able to pull out some success tips and all sorts of different stuff about what makes you tick so that people in any business ultimately will be able to apply it to their lives. So where are you at today? What's your operation look like? What's going on?
Yep. So, you know, I'm an open book, man. Ask me whatever you want. But yeah, right now it's a pretty simple business model. 100% of our model is wholesaling here in South Florida. We have a small team of seven, and that's by design. You know, when I got into business, I never had dreams or aspirations to grow this huge, huge operation and have a ton of people. In fact, it was the opposite. I always wanted to just kind of keep it small and tight knit. And, you know, I always wanted a virtual business, a business that would allow me to do the things that I'm passionate about, you know, travel with family, impact other people's lives. Personal development is a big passion of mine. And so, you know, that's part of the reason I got into Life Inner, as you know, about a year, year and a half ago, is I always wanted to build a business that would support my lifestyle, would support my vision. And so the business is pretty simple right now. Aside from myself, I have a an acquisitions manager. I have a dispositions manager. I have a lead manager, a dedicated cold caller, a virtual assistant, and a transaction coordinator. So it's a pretty small group. Of us work virtual. My transaction coordinator and I work here out of the office. Everybody else is in South Florida, and my lead manager is in Costa Rica.
Okay. So how long now have you had the 7 employees? How long has your company been that size?
Yeah, so up until about a month ago, it was 6 of us. We just recently brought on a dedicated outbound dialer. So it was about 6 of us for a good 2 years. Prior to that, the team has always fluctuated between 5 and 6, 5 and 7 people. It wasn't until about 2012, 2013 that, as you know, wholesaling is a transactional business. Mm-hmm. You know, you're only as good as your last deal. And about 2011, 2012, I just got really tired of having to take the calls on the weekend, speaking to sellers, going out on appointments, talking to buyers, like doing all the, wearing all the hats in the business. And so I said, how can I turn this transactional business into an actual business? Mm-hmm. And I realized that by bringing on the right people, putting them in the right seats, that's how you start to free yourself up from the business so that you can do the things that that you enjoy doing.
Yeah. Okay, great. So right now, if you don't mind sharing numbers, how many deals are you doing a month on average? Stuff like that.
Yeah. So actually, just to be totally transparent, this is actually a down year for us in terms of volume. We are doing smaller number of deals. On average, we're doing anywhere between 2 and 3. The good thing is we have tripled, if not quadrupled, our average profit per transaction this year. So, last year, our average profit per transaction was about 18, 19 grand. This year, we're upwards of 60 grand a deal. And so we're not doing as many deals, but we're doing a bigger pop for the deals we are doing, which is fantastic. You know, I think there's so much conversation about, how many deals are you doing? And I know people that are doing 20, 30 deals a month, but they might make 2, 3, 4 grand a deal, which is still a fantastic business. But with more volume comes more complications, more headaches. You really just got to have your systems and your team dialed in. This year it wasn't that we were trying to do less deals by design. It just, just the way the market is and the way things have turned, that's just the way it's ended up. We're still trying to do more volume, but it's really the focus is the bottom line. Like, how can we do better quality deals versus more deals, if that makes sense?
Right. No, that totally makes sense. So really it's the whole, the quality of the deal over the quantity of the deals thing, which I have embraced over my entire career. Our mutual good friend, Joe McCall, just told me to go get this book. So I did, Work Less, Make More. And that has always been
nice. One of I got to write that one down.
Yeah, it's a James Schramko, Work Less, Make More. Hard to forget. One of my mottos. Hard to forget. But he said, man, you really got to read this book because that is one of the that's one of the kind of the things that I've embraced my entire career, like I said, and I'd love to hear somebody who does 100% wholesaling to say the same thing, because to your original point, wholesaling can really be a hustle. We're going to come back to what your current operation is and some things like that. But now I want to take it all the way back to the beginning. Now let's get the origin story, Alex. Why real estate investing? But before we even get into real estate, maybe you could talk about your college career. Maybe you could talk about how you even got to the point of that. So many people that are beginning or are newer or have just done their first handful of deals, they need to be able to relate to somebody like you. So talk to me a little bit about that origin for you and what that was like.
Yeah. So for me, I remember going back when I was 11, 12 years old. I grew up in the baseball park and I was playing baseball pretty much my whole life. And I would buy packs of baseball cards and I remember trading them, flipping them, wholesaling them, which I didn't even know what wholesaling was at the time. And I would sell them and I'd make a small profit. And then I'd use that money to go buy more baseball cards. And I essentially would trade. It was around then that I think I kind of got hit with that bug where I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I wanted to do something for myself. What's weird is that when I got into college at Florida International University, something changed. I wanted to, my ambitions were to climb the corporate ladder. I always wanted to be the CEO or the CFO of a Fortune 100 company. And I don't know where that came from. I think I was kind of attracted to the prestige of the title or what I thought that looked like. And so I took a job with General Electric in their consumer finance division. And, 3 months into that job, I'll never forget it. I was averaging 70, 75 hours a week. My eyes were like cross-eyed, just looking at Excel and PowerPoint all day long. And it hit me at that point. I said, this is not what I signed up for. I remember looking at my boss and looking at my boss's boss and thinking to myself, I don't want to be that person. You know, I don't want to be in the office at 7, working till 8, 9 o'clock at night, you know, no family life. It just wasn't appealing to me. But I had made a 2-year commitment and I finished off that program. And, you know, around probably a year into that program, I started to pick up books on real estate. I had always read that, you know, most millionaires and billionaires, a large percentage of their portfolio or their wealth was through real estate. And so initially I was attracted by the money you could make in real estate. You know, so I bought a Carlton Sheets, no money down program. Yeah. I thought, you know, real estate, I thought real estate was all about like assuming loans, and that led to, Think and Grow Rich. And then that led to Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I just went down this cycle of just consuming as many personal development and as many real estate books as I could over like a 1-1.5 year period. So I left my corporate job. I went backpacking around Europe for about 3.5 months. And I remember being in an internet cafe in Ibiza. You know, we were partying for a couple of months at this point. I was funding the entire trip on my credit card. And a good buddy of mine, Ray Gonzalez, who we both know, he invited me to a marketing for deals bootcamp by Dave Lindahl that was going on. This was October 2005 in Atlanta. And Steve, you ever have like those fork in the road moments where I didn't have any money? Like I was completely out of cash, but I had a little bit of money left on my credit card, and it was like $997 to attend this this bootcamp, which to me at that time was like all the money in the world. I'm like, do I really want to spend $1,000 to go learn how to market for deals? I didn't even know what that meant. Long story short, I booked that seminar. I went, and then about 60 days later, Ray and I actually teamed up. We closed our first deal and we made about $45,000.
Oh, wow. That's great. I didn't realize you and Ray worked together on your first deal. That's really cool. There's
my first one.
That's very cool. There's a pivotal point that you just spoke to there. You read all the books, you did all the education, and so many people stopped there. And you went ahead and you took the next step. You took the fork in the road. You took the path less traveled. What is it, do you think, either in your own mind that made you seek out that path, or what is it, do you think, in other people's minds that prevents them from taking that path?
So, you know, I don't know if people are going to be able to relate to this, but I've always been kind of a ready, fire, and then aim type of guy. And so procrastination is something that's never really like held me back. You know, and I think for me, you know, Tony Robbins talks about pain versus pleasure. For me, the pain of working for somebody and having a job was greater than the fear I had of falling on my face and going out and trying something. And I was fortunate, you know, my parents, you know, they did everything for my sister and I growing up. And so I felt like I kind of had a safety net without really having a safety net. I think it was like a false sense, but I always had support around me. I never had anybody really, you know, trying to bring me down. I always had very supportive family and friends. And again, man, I hated my job, and I knew that I wasn't cut out to work for someone. And I've always just had high ambitions, and impacting others is something that I've always wanted to do. And so I knew that the only way possible to do that was to kind of go out and do my own thing. And then, you know, fortunately for me, I just kind of fell in love with real estate, and it's just, it's provided me and my family with what we have today.
It is so funny how the parallels between your story and my story. I mean, I just got to the point where I could not stand working for somebody else. And, you know, I just had that entrepreneurial bug that I had to fill. And for a large part of my life, I feel like I have just always been rebellious and trying to prove to others that I am good enough. I can make it happen. I can do it. Probably the best thing somebody could do is tell me that I couldn't do something and I would have to go out there and prove them wrong. So I've always had that kind of burning fire.
Right.
Maybe not exactly like you're talking about, but in the same vein. I want to pause here for a second, and I want to just thank everybody that's on the call right now and just say, hey, look, folks, if you have any questions for Alex, just type them on the screen. I'll make sure that they get asked at some point throughout this interview here. Norman, thanks. Sounds good. Jeff Ledman, you are the man. Thank you, guys. We got a lot of people on here now. Teresa, thanks. Mark, Dallas, thanks, guys, for being on the call. If you have any questions for Alex or myself, please type it in, and I'll make sure they get asked. Alex can't see your questions, so you can say whatever you want about him, okay? I'll make sure to only read him the good stuff. I promised him that. Right. So you were talking about, you're talking about kind of having your family support. How about mentors? You know, how have mentors, maybe business life or a combination of the two, played a role in your success?
You know, they played a big role. However, I didn't realize that until about 2 years into the business. So I did my first deal. I think this was December, January of 2006. And up until that point, like for the first couple of years, mentors were really the books that I consumed. What's crazy, Steve, is like I got involved in this business at 25 years old. The first 25 years of my life, I maybe read 4 or 5 books. From the age 25 until now, I've read hundreds and hundreds. And those first like 2-3 years, they really helped develop my mindset. And without that mindset, I don't think I'd be where I am today. But man, I remember the first couple of years, I kind of had a little bit of a mental block with the amount of money that, you know, I would have to pay at the time. I thought about it as an expense versus an investment. And those first couple of years, I made so many mistakes. I mean, I did well and I made a lot of money. I closed deals, but I had a lot of brain damage in the process. You know, there was things that I could have avoided that if I had a mentor in my corner to ask questions, to seek guidance and counsel, I would have avoided those things. And I would have shortcut the learning curve. So it wasn't about 2 years. I finally ponied up and I paid for a local mentor that really just kind of taught me the ropes, taught me what I didn't know at the time. And essentially kind of like he was the one that poured fuel on my fire. You know, that took what I was already doing well and made it better and taught me certain things. And then from there, you know, I've had so many coaches and mentors in the last 10, 12 years. And honestly, I don't think I'd be where I am today without them and without a lot of the books that I consume, the people that I surrounded myself with. I mean, I really believe that the starting point for anything is your mindset, because if you just don't believe you can achieve it, you're not going to, you know, so... they've been instrumental in my life. And by the way, not just business, but, you know, I have a life coach. I've had personal trainers. You know, I have coaches for different areas of my life because life is connected. Business, life, I mean, they all have a ripple effect on each other.
Yeah, totally agree. Gosh, that's wonderful, man.
I
want to jump around a bit now just to keep this thing fresh here and to keep you on your toes. Before I do that, I do want to just give a quick shout out to Custom Kitchens and Baths by Design. Crystal Ames is on here, and she just wants to let everybody in Southern Maryland know that as a real estate investing group member, you know, they don't require a deposit when you sign the contract. So please look her up if you're interested. Custom Kitchens and Baths by Design. Ron is on this call, and he is the proprietor of that business and a good longtime friend of mine and the co-founder of this group. Kara Cherry says, we are the same in that, Alex. I've never considered myself to be, quote, entrepreneurial, but I do throw off of being bigger and better and proving that I can. So she gets kind of a joy out of that as well. Yeah. So let me ask you, go a completely different direction, and then we're just going to zigzag back and forth here. Give me maybe the top 1, 2, or 3 software tools that are just that you need to have in order to operate on a daily basis.
Wow. So here's the caveat. I don't think any of these tools I need. I think if you took them all away, you know, I could still do what I do, but they definitely make life a lot easier. Podio is a CRM we use. Here's one thing I'll say about CRMs, because there's so much talk about what systems do you use. When I got started in this business, it was pen and paper and a phone and a computer. You know what I mean? So like, you don't need those tools in order to do deals. By the way, I got somebody trying to come into my office here. You don't need those tools to do deals. But yeah, Podio is one that we use religiously. Let me think, man. We use CallFire to send out, you know, to do text broadcasting. Honestly, man, like Boomerang for Gmail is a big one that we use. You know, so essentially you can send out emails and it'll boomerang back. We use that a lot. I'm not a big software guy, to be honest with you. I mean, we use CallRail that integrates into Podio and Globiflow. So, you know, we basically have a lot of automation behind our CRM. But I can't sit here and tell you, hey, man, these are some software tools that like I live and die by. It's you know, we leverage them, but it's not the end all be all for me.
Yeah. Okay. How about when you are spending some time reflecting, you know, I don't know whether you spend some quiet time in the morning or whether you have that maybe during the day or when you're out driving around. Do you use Evernote to take notes when you just have a thought, or do you use,
I know you
like to use Boxer to communicate, those types of things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I primarily use Evernote. You know, I'm a part of a couple of masterminds. You and I are part of one. So anytime I go to a mastermind, I go to a conference, some type of meeting, I use Evernote because it's a cool place where you can document and store all of your notes. And so I use Evernote for that. Whenever I'm out and about, I always send myself like voice memos, you know, things that I want to remember. I use Boxer a lot, you know, with my team and like, you know, with buddies like you. And so sometimes we share different resources on Boxer, different quotes. And then I also use the notes, you know, just a notepad on my iPhone to document ideas. I really believe that there's a lot of power in having mental equity. And what I mean by mental equity, Steve, is that we don't realize it, but our brains are occupying all this, like there's so many things that are running through our brains on a daily basis. And I think you have to have some sort of system or mechanism to take those thoughts, take those ideas, get them out of your brain, document them somewhere, because whether you believe it or not, consciously and subconsciously, it frees up your mind to operate and to think about, you know, things that really matter. You know what I mean? There's so many things like, Nat's probably on here, but you know, Nat, sometimes I tell Nat, like I have a hard time falling asleep because I have so many things running through my mind, not just business, but in life. Yep. And whenever I go through a process of just kind of decompressing at the end of the day, getting away from TV, getting away from technology, getting my thoughts on paper, I sleep better. I feel like I can just operate smoother, more efficiently. I don't know if this makes sense, but you know, you got to have some sort of system or mechanism to take everything from here onto somewhere else where you can revisit in the future when it makes sense.
Absolutely. That's wonderful. You hit on so many good things there. I just want to say that for many years, I did the same thing. This whole CRM thing was talked about, and I didn't even know what that meant. And I was just doing on pen and paper, Alex, just the same way that you were.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I still have it on my desk here today. I don't use it for calls or anything. All that stuff gets routed through Podio now, which we use. But I love it. And I think there is something to be said for the grit of just getting right down to it. And that's brass tacks and all. Kara posted on here. She says, she loved the quote, "You don't need the tools to do deals." When she started her business, she worked at a local library. She didn't even have the internet at home. That's grit. That's what I'm talking about.
Wow.
That's what it takes to succeed.
Yep.
Alex, a lot of people don't know this. Well, we didn't include it in the intro, but you run an extremely popular podcast called The Flip Empire, right?
Yeah. So about 2.5 years ago, you know, I've always had a desire to reach out and impact people. I think I've alluded to that a few times. And, you know, I've never been one to just, I thought about, do I want to do public speaking? You know, do I want to go out and start a group like you've done with Southern Maryland Real Estate Investors Group? That didn't feel like the right thing for me. So I kind of fell into like the podcast. I would listen to a lot of podcasts on a daily basis. That's how I would consume a lot of the content, you know, a couple of years ago. And said, I said, I'm always talking real estate. I talk personal development. I talk life. Why not just start my own podcast and kind of share my journey, share my thoughts? At first, I was like, I didn't have a plan to monetize the podcast. I really just wanted to impact people. I was genuinely leading with wanting to help others and just kind of share my journey, share what's worked, share what's working, what's not working. And so, yeah, man, about 2.5 years ago, I launched the Flip Empire Show. And, you know, here we are 262 episodes later. And, man, it's opened up so many doors and opportunities. But the biggest thing it's given me is fulfillment.
Yeah.
You know, when people reach out to me, whether it's a message or whether it's in person, and they tell me, hey, your podcast has made a big impact on my life and on my business, it genuinely fires me up. I mean, it's the best feeling.
Well, when we spent some time together in Bimini this past summer, I told you when we were cruising around the island in our golf cart that you have this ability to speak off the top of your head on those podcasts without interrupting yourself, without what would seem to an outsider a break in thought even. And I don't know if your thoughts are always that clear, but man, your podcast comes up just
no, they're not
smooth. I don't know. Maybe you do hefty editing, but I don't think that you do.
No, I don't. I don't know, man. I think you know what it is that the biggest compliment people have given me about the podcast is that they feel that I'm genuine and sincere. And I take that as the biggest compliment because when I hop on the podcast, I really just am sharing my journey. I'm sharing my thoughts. I don't have a script. I'm just kind of speaking from the heart. And and I think that comes across. So that's probably the biggest thing working for me in the podcast.
Okay. Well, we'll do one more question regarding tech, et cetera. But maybe two more questions. I mean, I have a selfish question to ask you first, and then I'll ask you one more tech question,
all right,
and then we'll get away from tech. How would somebody go about, what would be the first step for somebody who wanted to kind of do the same thing that you've done with podcasts? How would somebody go about starting their own podcast?
That's a loaded question. So I don't know if you know a guy by the name of John Lee Dumas, who hosts Entrepreneur on Fire.
Okay.
So it's one of the biggest business podcasts out there. He's got like over 2,500, maybe 3,000 episodes. The guy does an episode a day, which is insane to me. He's just an animal.
Wow.
I had the same questions. And so I reached out to him before I launched the Flip Empire Show, and I paid him a lot of money to consult with him for an hour and just pick his brain because I knew that I was going to have a lot of brain damage trying to figure it out on my own. So I paid the guy a lot of money to just hop on a Skype call with him for an hour and ask him all the questions I had about podcasts. It's pretty simple. Like, here's what I would recommend if you're really interested in starting a podcast. What separates you from every other podcast out there? If I was to start the podcast today, I would go very local and niche, and I would want to dominate Miami real estate, for example, versus being another Flip Empire show or another general real estate show. I've actually had a lot of conversation with Joe McCall about this. So if I was going to start today, I would think about, what's my angle? What value can I provide that is not going to be just another flipping podcast out there? Because there's hundreds of them. So that's what I would do. I was fortunate in that I owned the domain flipempire.com back in like 2007, 2008. And when I told John Lee Dumas that, he's like, dude, it's got to be called the Flip Empire Show. And that kind of just made sense for me. But I would figure out my angle, and then I would hire a company or hire somebody to take care of, you know, all the tech stuff, because your time is best spent delivering content. And so for me, the it frees me up to know that I can just hit record, hop behind a microphone and share my thoughts, upload that audio to Dropbox, and I'm going to have somebody else take care of everything else in between. So those are just some quick general thoughts.
Okay, I love it. That's perfect. Thank you. Carl, who's one of my coaching students in Maryland, he says, interesting how you both say so many of the same quote nuggets. That's cool.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's cool, huh? Let me ask one more tech related question, and I promise we're going to get into some cooler nitty gritty stuff. Social media strategy. Okay. Do you have one?
Honestly, no. My social media strategy consists of hopping on and posting whatever I kind of feel the need to. Mm-hmm. I would love to say that I can provide a tremendous amount of value in this area, but the truth is that I'm not addicted to social media. I'm not on all that often. I generally use social media more to connect with friends, to consume some content, you know, but I'm not a big poster. What's crazy is that, so I'll kind of tell, I'll share a funny story with you. I don't think you've met Elizabeth from my team. You know Adrian, obviously, who handles from Bimini. So Adrian handles our dispositions, and he's really good at getting our property sold. So about a month and a half ago, we contracted a property. I think we contracted it at, I don't know, I want to say it was like $290,000. It was on the higher end. We typically don't deal in that price range. He was marketing that thing for about 2 weeks, and we could not find a buyer. Like, for the life of us, we couldn't find a buyer. My transaction coordinator, Elizabeth, posted the property on her Instagram, which has like 300, 400 followers. A buyer came from that Instagram post, and we made 40 grand in the deal. So there's absolutely a place for social media in the business. I'm just not one that honestly has spent a whole lot of time trying to figure that out. If you're going to use social media, I would figure out, how can you lead with value? I think that's going to be kind of a theme you hear from me. How can you lead with value? How can you provide content that other people find, they find value in it, and then figure out, you know, how to tap into social media to sell, whether it's properties or a service that you have, versus just using it to always pitch. That's my two cents on it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Very good. Very good. We were just having an interesting discussion about it. Let's say you were to tag me in a post and then I share it, mm-hmm. but then you shouldn't like it again. You shouldn't like your own post when it comes back around. I'm afraid that has the effect of almost like spam to the Facebook algorithm. That is a complete total crackpot theory on my part. I don't know if that's true or not, but it would seem to me that that's too much as far as Facebook is concerned. Okay. Well, thanks. We'll get away from tech for a little bit. Go ahead.
Yeah. One thing I was just going to throw in, Steve, Gary V, he's got a great podcast, Gary Vaynerchuk, called the Gary V Audio Experience. Mm-hmm. He's the guy to learn social media from, and not just social media, but just being an entrepreneur. I mean, the guy's a madman. Every once in a while, I plug into his podcast and 5 minutes listening to that guy. And I learn things and I get ideas that I would have never thought of. I mean, he's just an animal when it comes to business, marketing, and everything in between.
Yeah. Good. Very good. The last guy that we did the live with, Brenton Hess, he has been mentored by Gary Vaynerchuk. It's pretty cool.
You're kidding me.
So, no.
That is very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Brenton's a cool guy. He actually spoke at our group last month, and he's a good guy.
Okay.
All right. Let's get into some personal development stuff, man. What makes you tick, Alex? You know, this is something that I promised the viewers here. Folks, if anybody has a question, anybody has anything they want to ask Alex, please go ahead and type it in. I'll make sure it gets asked. Stephanie, Shad, Mike, thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
We were almost 30 at a time there, strong here, Alex, so we have a lot of people on. So I'm going to go into my Tim Ferriss ripoff questions here. Some of them are, some of them my own. But we want to know kind of what makes you tick. So what, recently speaking now, because you're a guy that's always about progress, what new belief, behaviors, or habits have you recently adopted? And if you can't come up with anything, then maybe you could give us a newer belief, behavior, or habit that you've adopted in like the past 5 years or so that's really positively impacted your life or your business.
Yeah. I'll tell you what. So I've always been a big advocate of the morning routine, you know, and the morning routine can consist of, everybody has a different variation of what that. So for me, I've gone through I've tested different things, from waking up at 4 a.m. to waking up at 6 a.m. to waking up at 8 a.m. What do I do when I wake up? Do I avoid my phone for an hour? Do I meditate first? Do I drink, you know, 24 ounces of water and then go work out? So I've tested so many things. I've done positive affirmations for like 10, 15 minutes straight. I've played with so many different things. And I think one belief that I've recently adopted, I've kind of gone through a season in the last couple of months where I've gone away from my morning routine. And if I'm being totally honest and transparent, you know, and I kind of shared this with my wife recently, I kind of felt like I was in a little bit of a funk. Mm-hmm. You know, I had gotten away from my morning routine. I was waking up a little later. And there was a little bit of guilt associated with that. I haven't been reading. You know, I used to read on a daily basis. The last month or two, I've kind of gotten away from just the things that I think helped get me to where I am today. And if I'm being just totally honest, I've kind of been in a little bit of a funk the last month to 2 months. And so you might be kind of surprised to hear that, because it's probably the opposite of what somebody might share. And I think one belief that I've recently adopted is that it's okay as long as you recognize it. And then what are you going to do to go in that different direction? Like, how do I snap myself out of that state versus have that guilt and beat myself up about it? And honestly, this is something I wasn't even expecting to share, but it's where I'm at right now. Mm-hmm. And I think so for me, the belief is it's okay. I recognize it, but now what am I going to do about it? Am I going to choose to stay in this quote unquote funk, or am I going to learn something from it, change my state, and go in this different direction? Yeah. Does that make sense?
That makes complete and total sense. So, we must be brothers somehow, man, because I hope that my wife is watching this right now, and I hope that she's listening, because I have been going through the same daggone thing, man, ever since say August. I've been in the same type of funk. I've been completely out of my routine, and I am feeling the same feeling. So my question to you is, what are you doing to kind of change that now, and how could our listeners or our viewers maybe implement some of those same types of things that you're trying right now to try to kind of break out of that right now?
Yeah. So for me, you know, one of the things I keep alluding to my wife, which obviously, you know, I recently, as of a couple of days ago, I shared with her that I'm allergic to average. I'm allergic to mediocrity. And the last couple of months, I feel like from a health and fitness perspective, I've been completely average in my life. You know, I used to work out on a daily basis. And the last couple of months, I don't know what happened, but I've just kind of gotten away from that. I've kind of gotten a little more laxed with what I put in my body. And by the way, not to say I'm being a complete fat ass and I'm just gorging all the time. That's not the case. But it's just, it's, I feel like it's average. You know what I mean? And so it's quickly deciding that it's going to change. And so from what I'm putting in my body from the morning until the, you know, I'm doing it intermittent fasting now is something that I'm testing and I'm playing with. You know, kind of similar to Tim Ferriss, I like experimenting with different things. I'm working out now at 5 a.m. I'm about to hire, I just hired a personal trainer, which I start with on Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. And so if you, it's kind of that definition of insanity, you know, you keep doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. And so for me, it just, it was that fork in the road. It's like, okay, enough is enough. What's going to be different? You know, so I'm paying for a trainer. I'm, you know, I'm just being more conscious about what I'm putting in my body. I'm testing out intermittent fasting. I think for people listening, whether it's business, whether it's health, whether it's a relationship, just decide that that's not what you want and course correct. You know, don't beat yourself up about it. Don't feel guilty, but just make a decision that it's going to be different and then take some sort of action. Even if it's a small step, it's you're stepping, it's 1 foot ahead of the other. It's, you know, a mutual friend of ours, Tom Kroll, is always talks about progress, not perfection. Yeah. And that's really resonated with me. It doesn't have to be this huge shift, but just take one small step. You know, so if like, if you haven't been in the gym in years, work out for 5-10 minutes a day for the first week, you know, build some sort of momentum and then go from there.
Yeah. I love it, man. I love it. And, you know, with this whole thing, you know, I also wonder, man, sometimes it seems like we are divinely given these moments of pause in our lives. And really it's our responsibility to sometimes not try to force the change so much on our own, but just to fully absorb and appreciate whatever it is that we're feeling at any given moment. And that can really suck when it's not great, man. But Frank McKinney says, you know, relentless forward motion, put 1 foot in front of the other. And Frank McKinney has run these, you know, 135-mile Badwater races, foot races through the Death Valley in 120 degrees or whatever it is. And, you know, and his, every single step of that race, you want to give up, but he just says relentless forward motion.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I say that a lot, you know, when I'm in a season, like I happen to find myself, and it sounds like you're in the same one. Sorry folks, don't mean to turn this into a therapy session, but if that helps you at all, when you guys are in those same periods. Okay, great, Alex.
One other thing, Steve, yeah, one other thing I wanted to kind of throw in, I think this is why it's the power of association, the power of the people that you surround yourself with. You know, when you find yourself in this funk, this season, whatever it might be, you know, having people in your corner, like for me, you're one of those people, you know, like that, and there's several that I have, you know, it's kind of a tight group, but who can I pick up the phone and call and just be, you know, honest and transparent. Don't fake it, right? Just, hey, this is what I'm going through. And sometimes either that person just listening to you or that person sharing with you their perspective or something you hear could be the catalyst for change. Yeah. And so, you know, think about who you associate with yourself with. You know, we've all heard that, you know, you make the average of the 5 people around you. Well, kind of put that aside for now. The rest of your life is also impacted, not just money and your finances, but your health and your mindset, your beliefs by the people that you associate with. So making sure that you just have the right people in your corner, whether it's family, friends, or you know, mastermind members, associates, whoever it might be.
Man, I love it. Folks, if you guys like this, hit the like button. If you love it, hit the heart button. If you have a question or if you just want to make a comment and encourage this conversation, if you want to see it go in a different direction, please let's make this interactive just as if we were in the room together, okay? Alex, what was the, like, if you can narrow it down to, like, one pivotal, like, belief, behavior, or habit that most positively impacted your real estate investing career, what do you think that was?
So I don't know if this is a belief or a habit, but I'll tell you what, tithing has been such a big part of my life. Ever since I started tithing back in 2013, like religiously tithing, no pun intended, but just consistently tithing, that has been such a game changer. And I'm kind of hesitant in even sharing that because I don't want it to come across as if I'm recommending you tithe and you give 10% of your income to the church or to wherever you get your spiritual food because you're expecting to receive something. But it's amazing how there's been times in my life where I've been in a financial crunch or things just weren't going the way I wanted them to. And I held on to the money a little harder than I should have. And I read something in a book. I think it was the four spiritual laws of prosperity. Mm-hmm. That it was something about the fact that like the tighter you grip onto something, you don't have the opportunity to open your hand and receive more. And there's been, you know, financial crunches or otherwise where I knew this money was kind of earmarked for the church or for wherever I got my spiritual food, that I held on to it longer. Things continue to just kind of be more difficult than they needed to. And whenever I release that money, like, man, it's crazy. There's multiple stories, but like within days, Steve, something, I'm just kind of like filled with abundance. And I realize that sounds a little cliche, maybe somewhat corny, but I just have countless testimonials in my life that when I tithe and when I give, I receive so much more. So I don't know if it's a belief or a habit, but it's one of those things. I guess it's a habit because I do it on a monthly basis. But it's been one of those things that has just been, I think, critical to my success. And it's not just, I don't do it because I want to receive. I do it because I believe it's the right thing to do. And I genuinely, it just feels good to give. And so, again, I don't know if that answers your question, but that's like one of the first things that comes to mind for me.
Well, that's great. And I want to get into some of that, which we will do here a little bit towards the end of it. But I wish I could remember the name of the book. I'm sitting here trying to search my email to find it, that I read a really good book on tithing a number of years ago. And as you say, have religiously implemented it ever since. And I totally agree with you. And, yeah. You know, I don't want to make it sound like a farce. I don't want to make it sound like a cause and effect, but I have found that in the times of my life when things have not been firing off, it's usually because I've been a little too stingy. And then, you know, it's one of those things. I mean, you know, if you go ahead and you tie it, it can, you know, you will see it come back. It's almost like a law of the universe. It's really kind of interesting. But in any event, if I can find the name of that before this live is over, I'll share it with everybody. Okay. So let's see. Okay. Here's a fun one. And anybody, if you have a question for Alex, anything you want to say, here's a fun one. Philip, thanks for watching. Kara says, yeah, make the decision. All right. What is your favorite failure?
Favorite failure. Wow. Dude, I feel like I fail on a daily basis. What is my favorite one? Well, I'll tell you. So in real estate, 2007, I had wholesaled, I don't know, the first couple of years in the business, probably 30, 40 houses, first couple of years in the business. I had never rehabbed the property. And so around middle of 2007, I thought it was a good idea to do my first rehab on a $500,000 property out in Fort Lauderdale. Actually, not too far from where you guys are now. And so I tackled that deal with a partner. We bought the property for, I think it was $525,000. It had an after repaired value of about $750,000, $770,000, it was somewhere in that range. And so we felt, hey, there's a pretty you know, decent amount of equity here. Why don't we rehab it, put 40, 50 grand into it and retail it? And so just sharing with you the timing, you kind of can already imagine what happened. We took down this property. It wasn't a $40,000 or $50,000 rehab. It was about $100,000-$110,000 rehab. We thought we could get it done in 6 months. It took us about a year. By the time we were done with this thing, the market had completely turned on us. Mm-hmm. And the property that was now worth $750,000, $770,000 was probably worth about $600,000, $630,000, somewhere in that range. I mean, it was a significantly, like we just took a hit. So long story short, not only did I learn to find out that I absolutely hate rehabbing, it just wasn't for me. And I feel kind of guilty sharing that with you because I know that's your bread and butter. It just wasn't for me. Like it wasn't my thing. And I think I just suck at it. I just didn't have the systems. And dude, we lost close to $100,000 on that property. Wow. I lost about $54,000 of my own money. Thank God I was pretty well positioned where that didn't completely sink me, but that was a painful experience to not only like go through that entire rehab for a year, try to sell the property only to like, I was a motivated seller at that point, and I was happy to sell the property at a loss, at $100,000 loss. Coincidentally, here's where that's been the biggest blessing in my real estate career. Number one, I realized that rehabbing wasn't for me. I was going to stick to wholesaling. Number two, that's what propelled me to go and get a mentor. And so from that experience, I went out and I paid for a mentor, and it kind of comes full circle to what we were talking about at the beginning of the live here. And so that's probably been my biggest failure that has propelled me in the direction I am today. And then, man, I've made a ton of mistakes when it comes to hiring and building a team. The wrong hire in your business can really, really set you back. And so, you know, one of my current mentors shared with me, you know, hire slow, fire fast. And when I started building a team, I flipped it. I would hire fast because I just wanted to be done with it. And I would give people so much rope. And to a certain degree, I'm still kind of guilty of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I make mistakes on a daily basis, man. Yeah.
Well, me too. I think, Alex, you're probably an extremely loyal guy, just like I am. And you kind of want to give people on down to their last chance. So I don't think that we can blame you too much for that. Let's go back. So your favorite failure, you know, it sounds like, you know, we're kind of a victim of the market, you know, kind of correcting and stuff like that. So with that in mind, you know, the market and any kind of forecast that you might have, where we are in this market right now, where do you see it heading?
Man, that's the million plus dollar question, right? I mean, that's the conversation that you know, is going around in a lot of our circles now. Obviously, nobody has that crystal ball. I fully expect the market to turn and to soften. Matter of fact, here in South Florida, we're already starting to see the market soften a little bit. You know, we play in the range of $100,000 to $250,000 properties, and we're still moving those fairly quickly. Anything over that, you know, the days on market is increasing. It's taking a lot longer. So, you know, a lot of advice I've been given by people that I consider a lot smarter and wiser than I am, you know, now's a good time to really, if you're a rehabber, get involved in projects that you know you can be in and out of in 3-4 months max. Don't swing the bat and swing for the fences on a higher priced property that is not in your comfort zone. And really now's the time to wholesale more, I think. And take some chips off the table. You know, now's the time to be well capitalized, well positioned, because the market will turn. I believe it's going to happen, you know, depending on where you are in the country, probably sometime in the next maybe 12 to 15 months is my belief. I've talked to people that think we probably have 2.5 years of runway. I've talked to people that expect it, you know, Q2, Q3 of next year. You know, interest rates are rising. And so it's going to be tougher for people to qualify. If you're a wholesaler, you know, your rehabbers are going to get affected. That's going to affect the wholesaler. So now's the time to just make sure that you have a lot of private lenders in your corner, that you have an emergency fund, you know, of 6 to 9 months household expenses, and just be in a position that when the market turns, you can be a buyer. You can go shopping and you're not kind of scrambling. I think in 2007, when we lost about $100,000, I was oblivious to the market conditions. Like I just thought I was going to continue to do this. And I was just naive and stupid. And now I feel like I have my eye on the ball. I know it's coming, you know, because history tells you that the market's going to turn. I don't forecast it to be anything like what we experienced in 2008, 2009. But I think it's just a good opportunity to just be aware and position your business, try to insulate your business to the best of your ability so that you could capitalize from the market downturn, not be affected by it.
Yeah, we definitely have a number of properties that we have out there right now. And I can attest to the fact that, yeah, it has slowed down. And, you know, this is always the slow part of the season. Usually I tell people do not expect to sell a property between Thanksgiving and the second week of January. It's typically when it'll pick back up mm-hmm. in the third week of January. So, but it feels to me, Alex, like it's just started now, maybe a month and a half, 2 months ago, where, you know, we just almost overnight got kind of an ice cold, just showing stopped. And, you know, it just kind of seemed to freeze yep. up a little bit. However, I am optimistic that we're not crashing. I do believe that we're plateauing. So absent any yeah. sort of catastrophic Agreed. Thing happening, war, et cetera, then I think that we'll be okay. But I, unfortunately, for those of us who bought projects many months ago and are now selling them now, we have been feeling the pinch of that. And the profitability on those deals, yeah. unfortunately, is not what we once thought they were going to be. But that's a function of the market, and that's investing.
Right.
Let's see here. But we do have a question, but I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to wait on that one, and we'll get to that toward the end. You and I have had this conversation privately, but I would, especially for our beginners who all they see on Instagram and Facebook is hustle, 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 and all this stuff. When you hear the word hustle, what comes to mind?
That's a great question. I have mixed feelings with the word hustle. And here's, I'll share with you why I have mixed feelings. There's a lot of people out there that I consider to be just super, super successful, very, very wise, very smart, that are out there pounding the pavement about hustling. And I think there's a time and a place to hustle. But I didn't get into business to hustle all day, every day, 24/7. Like, that's not for me. And I'm not making those people right or wrong. I think it goes back to having clarity and having a vision for your life, which I know now I'm kind of speaking your language. What do you want your life? What do you want your business to look like? And that will determine if you want to hustle all day, every day. But for me, I want to spend time with my family. I want to travel. I want to participate in charity events. I want to impact others. I want to connect with people like you. I don't want to spend 18 hours a day behind a computer screen or at the office working. That's just not for me. And again, if you do want to do that, that's perfectly fine. But just know that that's what you want, and have a why. Like, why is it that you want that? You know what I mean? So I have mixed feelings about the word hustle, because I don't think I'd be where I'm at today without hustle. But I've also gotten a lot smarter, and I've gotten more clear and more focused on what I want and why I want it. And it doesn't involve hustle all the time. Like, there's a time and a place for that. You know, there's times that we got to buckle down in the business. But, you know, I'm not one to just pound it and say, hey, burn your eyelids 18 hours a day for the first 3 years. Because what if 3 years later, like, you're not promised tomorrow. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Like, what if you burn your face off for 3-5 years to enjoy what you can be enjoying now? And that's one of the things Life Ender has taught me, is that your ideal life is a lot cheaper than what you think it is. Mm-hmm. You know, when you put what you really want on paper, and you put a weekly or a monthly dollar amount to what you want your life to look like, I bet you it's a lot cheaper than what you think it is. And so why delay life when you can start living life now? And that's not to say you don't hustle, but hustle at the expense or at the sacrifice of what? You know, like, I know people that hustle and they can't remember the first 5-6 years of their son or their daughter's life. Like, to me, that's a tragedy. Mm-hmm. You know what yeah. I mean? Like, that bothers me. Like, I want to be there for my girls, and I am there for my yeah. girls. I want to be there for my family. And what's crazy is that people say, well, I'm doing this for my family, but your family likely didn't ask you to do that. I think that's more internal for a lot of people. You know what I mean? Yeah.
No, I totally agree. Alex, I want to have a couple more longer form questions, then I'm going to hit you with some rapid fire questions. And then we have a number of Q&A that's coming in that we'll hit here toward the end.
Okay.
Again, folks, if anybody has any questions, any comments for Alex, type them in. I can see them, and I will be happy to queue them up and read them to him. Alex, I know you're a big fan of, well, before I get into that, I want to talk a little bit about traction and EOS and stuff like that. But before we go down that path,
yeah.
What should a wholesaler who is consistently doing deals, what should their first hire be? Who should they hire first, and what duties should they give to them, do you think?
Yeah. Yeah. So the advice I'm going to give these people is not what I did. And so that's why I'm giving you this advice, because I've made those mistakes. So for me, my first hire was a lead manager, somebody that could essentially take me off the phones, because I just got burned out. I didn't want to continue taking those calls and talking to sellers. It just wasn't something I enjoyed doing. So for you, I would say, what's your highest and best use? I think one of the best exercises you could do is document where you spend every half hour of your day for the first week, and then figure out what's your highest and best use. Like, you know, what are the activities that you're doing that really move the needle? And what are those things that have to get done in your business and your life, but don't necessarily add value, whether it's data entry or picking up your dry cleaning or cleaning your house or anything in between. And so for me, an executive assistant, you know, a local assistant has been huge. Mm-hmm. Somebody that can take care of a lot of the things in my business and in my life that I don't necessarily have to do unless I want to, unless I choose to. And so I would generally say for most people, a local assistant. And I want to make sure that I stress, I don't mean a virtual assistant. I mean a local assistant.
Yeah.
Somebody that is in your backyard that can just take care of some of the heavy lifting that frees you up. Not only gives you some of that mental equity that I talked about earlier, but that allows you to focus on the things that are really, really going to move the needle in your business. Mm-hmm. And frankly, just give you the ability to buy back your time, mm-hmm. right? We only have 24 hours in a day. So it's how do you make use of that time? So generally speaking, Steve, I would probably say for most people, a local assistant.
Okay. I was going to go down the path of the EOS and traction stuff. I don't want to spend a lot of time with that, but maybe if you could just in a minute, just to explain to people what it is and how you've implemented that in your business and at what point would that be beneficial for someone to look into?
Yeah. So have you ever heard of a book or a person or a resource like constantly from several different people at different like phases in your life? So for the last couple of years, the book Traction by Gino Wickman kept popping up in my mm-hmm. life, whether it's a conversation I have with a buddy or an event I go to or a podcast I listen to. Traction, traction, traction. And then finally, it was a podcast I was listening to that somebody I highly respect said, I consider this to be like the business Bible, right? Like the Bible of business. And somebody said, it's like the E-Myth on steroids. And I'm a big Michael Gerber fan. I love the E-Myth. And when he said that, I was like, all right, I got to like put everything down and read this book. So about a year and a half ago, I read this book. And then I, around this time last year, I joined the Collective Genius, which is a mastermind. And a bunch of people in that mastermind were talking about traction and how they would advise hiring what's called an EOS implementer. And it was pretty expensive. You know, EOS implementers run anywhere between 10 and 25 grand. And that was the first thing I did when I left that meeting is I hired an EOS implementer. And essentially EOS, I'm going to do my best to kind of explain it, but it's broken up into six phases. It's how you run your meetings, right? It's how you track your data or a scorecard. It's how you operate. It's essentially putting an operating system into your business so that there's ways that you can solve issues by what's called IDS, identify, discuss, and solve. It's how do you run meetings, which is a structure called the level 10 meeting. How do you run your quarterly meetings, your annual meetings? You know, what are your core values? What's the purpose of your business? And that's like the foundation. So Steve, the first 10 years in business, I didn't have core values. I didn't have a purpose. We were in business to make money and nothing else. And it wasn't until about a year, year and a half ago that I realized my business didn't even have a foundation. Like I didn't give my team members a reason to come to work, and it has to be more than making money. So we went through a rigorous process of identifying what are our company's core values? Why do we exist? And it can't just be about money. And so we clearly identified our purpose, our core values. We identified our one-year plan, our two-year plan, our five-year plan. And so essentially EOS allows you to do this. It's implementing an operating system that gives you structure and gives you purpose. It gives you a reason it's not the end all be all. It's just one of many operating systems out there, but I'm a big advocate and a big fan of it.
Great. That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course, called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.